This week's After Dinner speaker is a largely laissez-faire commentator from the New Zealand Initiative, its chief economist, Eric Crampton. Kia ora, Eric.
Good evening.
Welcome back to Nights.
Thanks for having me.
No, I'm sorry, Eric. I know you wanted to talk about other things, but I really wanted to talk about that capital gains tax.
That's all right. We can talk about that too.
Gone for foreseeable lunchtimes. And your response to the government's decision to pull any support for the legislation which would have made a capital gains tax possible?
I think it was a good decision. I tend to be of the opinion that there is no economically desirable capital gains tax for New Zealand that's also politically feasible. Any of the ones that are going to be politically feasible will wind up being a nightmare if you actually tried to implement them. So it's rather for the best that the government backed away from it.
Now, economically desirable, your qualification there suggests that it might be possible to have an economically desirable capital gains tax. What would that be?
Well, there's arguments around it. There are economists who I respect and tax experts who I respect who are in favor of one if you could actually implement one that worked. There are other views that it might not make as much sense, and I tend to lean towards the latter, but it's all a little bit moot since you're never going to be able to implement one like that here. So if you're going to have one, it'd have to be clean across all forms of capital, that you wouldn't exempt the family home.
Yeah.
Any of the ones that wind up being politically feasible would have these exemptions built into it that would have their own distortions and cause problems. And you have to step back to look at what the underlying issue is that the government might be trying to solve with a capital gains tax. Much of the impetus, as I understood it, for a capital gains tax came from the sense of deep unfairness that's come in the housing market, where the massive ramp up in house prices in Auckland, while it's been good for those who bought early enough, and also in Wellington. I got really lucky that I moved here in 2014, for example, sold at Christchurch about the time that things leveled off there and came here. That is serendipity. But locking in those kinds of gains for those who didn't really earn it, that feels unjust, and it's even more unjust when you look at the causes of it, that it's these artificial scarcity rents that have been baked in because of the rules that we've put in place restricting the supply of housing. So there's some fairness issues that come in there. It means that people have felt an increase in inequality, even when, if you look at the income inequality stats, those have been flat for two decades.
Yeah.
It's this experience through housing and people's anxiety about that, about their kids' ability to get into housing, and real issues around housing shortages, people living in garages and the like. So there was a sense that there's been too much of a bubble in housing and that there's been too much money going into housing relative to other things. Now, if you want to solve that problem, though, capital gains taxes aren't the most obvious way of going about it.
I mean, for me, I never... The reasons that I see that it seemed rational to me in terms of bringing in a capital gains tax... Property, well, I thought there are lots of countries around the world which have a capital gains, gains tax and have property bubbles, housing booms. So it doesn't seem like it solves that problem. I also, like you, thought when the government decided that there would be no capital gains tax on the family home, much as that might benefit myself, I thought, well, that's immediately put a great big hole in the whole thing, which is probably going to make it more difficult. But the reason for me to have a capital gains tax, the best argument I could hear was that here is one bit of our economic, quite substantial amount of economic activity that is not taxed. And does that make, does that distort the way that we go about our business in this country? Because one bit of our, what we do is taxed and this other rather large chunk is not.
Yeah, so again, if we look back, the ramp up that you'll get in things like the valuation of a firm, well, that'll depend on expectations about the firm's future earnings, right? So say that you're an entrepreneur, you start a business, and you're taking very little income at the start. You can't afford to pay yourself anything. Your equity in the firm builds up, and the value of the firm really depends on its projections, right? The sales that they're going to be able to make in future, the revenues and profits they're going to be able to make in future. All of those profits are going to be taxed in the future, though. We have company taxes already in place that wind up being a form of withholding tax, so the owners pay it as though it's income, pay it as though it's an income tax. Having a capital gains tax then is a bit like a double taxation, where the future returns that are capitalized now get also taxed now. So you worry a little bit that there's going to be some problems there. So if we listen back to, there was a fantastic interview with Robin Oliver on 9 to Noon, 25th of February. He knows this stuff far better than I do. He was on the tax working group and I think was one of the lead authors on the dissenting view.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So within the tax working group this time, as well as in previous iterations, there were those who could see sort of the merits of on a blackboard case for a capital gains tax and would weigh that against the real-world implementation issues in New Zealand. Some would say that it made sense. Others would say that it didn't. Robin went into a lot of the problems involved in implementing it here. And he did talk about some of the effects then on capital formation and access to capital for New Zealand firms.
So one of the arguments is that, if I understand you rightly, is that if a company is sold at a profit, much more than it was initially valued, then that capital gain gets taxed. But that company will probably have a higher value if it's making good profits, and those good profits will be taxed anyway.
Yeah.
So what you're effectively doing is taxing somebody twice.
Yeah, there's a bit of that in it. If the increase in value comes because they own a lot of land that's appreciated in value, that's a little bit different again, and that gets back to some of the problems that I talked about in the land markets and the housing markets that we can get into a little bit more later, because, again, capital gains isn't the way of dealing with that particular problem. So Robin had talked about problems that you're going to get then in KiwiSaver if that were subject to a capital gains tax because of distortions between domestic and foreign ownership. He painted a scenario where there'd be tax advantages for Kiwis owning firms abroad and for foreigners to be owning shares in New Zealand firms relatively, and that seemed a bit odd. All of the real-world implementation issues start becoming a bit troublesome. You noted some what other distortions we might have. There's a generalized distortion towards wanting to invest in real assets rather than assets that are subject to inflation when you have a tax regime that taxes inflation. So we currently do that if you've got a term deposit in the bank, let's say, and it's paying you, say, a 5% interest rate.
If you're lucky.
It'll
be about 3%
these days. If inflation goes up, you're taxed also on the inflation component of interest, right? So that makes puts in a bit of a distortion towards real assets as compared to interest-bearing assets. You could look to redress the distortion by also putting a tax on real assets, which would also tax the inflation component of that. And that's one of the things that the Taxpayers Union had complained a lot about. And Robin Oliver had mentioned some of the inflation problems. But an alternative way of dealing with it would be to exempt the inflation component of interest from tax.
Yeah.
So you'd only be taxing on the real interest that's being earned.
What do you mean by a real asset?
Oh, so if you buy a house or shares in a firm as compared to buying bonds. If you buy bonds, they'll pay an interest rate. The effective interest rate depends on the inflation rate and the expected inflation rate. If the expected inflation rate is high, you're being taxed. A lot of your return is going to be just making up for inflation.
Yes.
And you're taxed on that component of it as well.
Yeah.
And that means that the real return is a lot lower than otherwise would have been.
And then for somebody who puts money in land or in property, and they get a capital gain, and that's not taxed.
Yeah.
So that's one of the arguments people like. At the moment, I save money by putting it in the bank, and yes, I pay tax on the interest I earn.
Mm-hmm.
If I just tried to save money by putting it in a house and hoping that it's going to go up in value, and they generally do, although not all the time, generally they have recently, then that money, all the gain comes to me. None of it goes to the government.
Yeah. So one of the distortions that you'll there also have, I'd mentioned before that prices reflect expected future earnings, right? So prices in the housing market are a little bit different because you'll have some people that are buying a house to rent out, and the amount that they're willing to pay for that is going to depend on expectations of what future rents are going to look like. And that'll depend on what people's expectations are about future supply and future scarcity. So if the market expects, or participants in the market expect, that effective scarcity will become worse because there's going to be increases in demand relative to supply's ability to adjust to it, then prices will go up, baking in now the expectation of the rental income to come. Now, again, we have some of those problems of double taxation if you're taxing both the rental income and the capital gain from the expectation of future rental income. Homeowners, if you're an owner-occupier, you're not really paying rent to yourself.
No.
And that part isn't taxed. And so there may be a bit of a distortion there, and economists will argue about that. But it's still not really striking at some of the root of the problem, where if you just didn't have these scarcity rents built into land in the same way, there wouldn't be a capital gain to be taxed in the first place.
Okay, and I want to get to that, but there are a couple of things that come to mind. First, why is it? Is there any rational reason, or is it purely political, that we don't have a capital gains tax in this country?
Well, for three decades, we've had a tax system that has evolved around the absence of a capital gains tax.
And so, is that absence because the advice that we've been given is that it's not a good idea? Is there a rational reason, apart from a reason to do a privilege, that determines that we don't have a capital gains tax in New Zealand?
You know, I don't know enough about the history from the 80s tax reforms on when all of that was set up, why it was part of the changes that flipped the tax system to have taxation on income when it's earned, taxation on dividends as they're earned, and then exempting the there are two basic ways that you can set up retirement.
We used to have death duties, didn't
we?
Well,
yeah. And those were a nightmare because they induce a lot of tax planning. They don't end up earning you that much money because people who have enough money that would be to be taken to have it taken are able to structure their affairs in a way to get around it. So it ends up making the accountants pretty rich and not getting inland revenue very much money. We have a tax system, though, that in general taxes income at the start. When you put it into a retirement account, it taxes the earnings on it as they're earned, but it doesn't tax you when you pull the money out of that account. So it's part of the choice to have that kind of a tax system that they didn't have a capital gains tax in. But as a result of that, we've had for three decades a tax system that's evolved to make sure that ways that people try and hide wage and salary earnings or just normal income as capital gains have those taxed as income. So you see things like the Bright Line rules in investment property. So if you buy a house, do it up, and then sell it, that's treated properly as income because it is income. You're buying the house, you're putting your own labor into it, and then you're selling it, and you're getting the return to your earnings through the final sale price.
And how easy is it is it reasonably easy for the Inland Revenue Department to pursue that?
Well, that's
or
why
is
they
it
went
easy
with,
to hide it?
That's why they went with the Bright Line rule. So it was always kind of around the intention. If you'd intended to buy it, and again, you'd be better to listen to Robin Oliver on this than me, but if you'd bought the property with the intention of doing it up and selling it, then you're going to be subject to tax when it's sold. When that gets hard to police, they start putting in things like a Bright Line rule saying, well, if you've only owned the thing for 2 years, you weren't really intending to do other than do it up and flip it. So we're going to treat that as being income rather than being an exempt gain. So they put in a few rules like this, and these sorts of rules find themselves all the way through the tax system. Trying to bolt a capital gains tax onto a system that's evolved around the absence of a capital gains tax is a lot different than building up a tax system that has one right at the start.
Right.
So just pointing to ones that exist abroad and saying, well, if they've got it, it'd be easy to have one here too. It's a little more complicated than that.
New Zealand, am I right in saying that our labor force is relatively unproductive for our standard of living as a Western nation? And that we lack capital on the whole, and that we have a lot of private debt?
So I don't have the figures to hand on private debt. We are one of the less capital-dense countries from stuff that I've previously seen from the Productivity Commission. We're at a margin where if there were greater capital investment, you should expect higher wages rather than lower wages.
So given we don't tax capital gain, why is that?
Oh, there's all kinds of reasons for shallowness in New Zealand's capital markets. One, we're far from everywhere and distant. There's a bit of systematic risk to the country. We're one of the few countries that actually tries to scare away foreign investment rather than attract it. So everywhere else in the world, foreign investment is seen as this great thing. They'll have ministries that are devoted to try and attract more foreign investment and more foreign capital to try and help them build up their country. Here we make you wait a year while the Overseas Investment Office decides whether you're good enough to be allowed to invest in anything here. Well, might not be a year, but it might be a year. And you don't know how long your capital is going to be sitting idle in escrow waiting for a judgment. Those sorts of things can wind up mattering. There are big components to it that we just don't understand, though. Nobody has a really good handle on New Zealand's productivity problem, that some of it is going to be because we're small. Agglomeration seems to matter a lot. Bigger places have become more productive, and New Zealand just isn't a bigger place, so we've been locked out of some of those kinds of gains. I think some of it comes down to misuse of bad land planning decisions that make it harder to develop in Auckland and the places that can be more productive.
Now, this brings me to the point you wanted to make in this interview. Now, you talked about one of the drivers politically behind a capital gains tax was the sense that there's this unfairness that if you're sitting on property, you just have to sit there and wait and you will earn money.
Yep.
And you're working, you pay, you get your wages, you pay your tax. You can't avoid that. And if you consume, you can't avoid a tax through GST. So if inequality is through the property market and those in the middle and lower income brackets not being able to own a home is not the reason to tax capital gains, then what is the best solution to the problems of us having these bubbles around property that keep on seeming to develop in different parts of the country?
Yeah, so if you look in places, like if you look across the United States, they have capital gains taxes there, but you have widely divergent outcomes across different housing markets. In some places where they make it really easy to build more housing, you just don't get capital gains in housing. House prices stay about three times the median house. The median house costs about three times the median household income. And whenever prices look like they're going to be increasing a little bit, well, people start building more houses because there's money to be made in building more houses. New Zealand's had a very restrictive urban planning regime, and that's meant that we've got artificial scarcity in housing, where the right to build a house is what ends up being valuable. Land that is zoned to allow more housing ends up being really artificially valuable. Unlocking that requires a lot of fundamental changes to how we deal with zoning and infrastructure issues, infrastructure financing, and
Are you saying Auckland has to sprawl even more?
I'm saying they need to be both up and out. It's not just sprawl. You need to have enough development at the city's fringes so that land prices downtown don't get out of whack. You need to have it comprehensive, right? So that people who want to live in the bigger spreads outside of town and have a really long commute, ideally you'd put congestion charging on that. You need to open it up so that that development can happen. Minister Twyford gave an address to our members. We have an annual retreat every year.
This is a New Zealand initiative.
Yes, yep. The initiative. And this was about a month ago where he talked about wanting to open up so many development opportunities that you flood the market with development opportunities and you no longer get capital gains in housing. Instead, you have housing affordability.
Is this private development, or does the state have to get in there and build some stuff and fund some of this building itself?
The state has to facilitate a lot of the infrastructure by coming up with some better ways of financing it, and I think we've talked about some of those before. I understand some of those now to be progressing legislatively. We should be expecting some legislation June, July, maybe, that will make it a lot easier for developers to get financing for the infrastructure that they need for development, so that the benefits go to those who are getting the new properties, the costs aren't finding their way onto council's balance sheets and scaring them away from having development. So getting that sorted will solve housing affordability, mean we don't have the kinds of scarcity crises that we wind up with, and will allowing a functional housing market again can finally mean that you don't have these steady ramp-ups in prices all the time.
Eric, it's great to have you on again.
Thank you.
Sorry I changed the topic on you, but
that's all right. We can talk about this, too.
Yeah.
We could also have gotten into more some of the theory around Mirrlees and Atkinson and Stiglitz and the inefficiency of taxing capital compared to income.
We've only got so much time. There's always next time, Eric. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Eric Crampton from the New Zealand Initiative, back with more largely laissez-faire thoughts in a few weeks' time.